The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
What is going on, guys? You are listening to the High Spot Podcast. We're here live at the Tuscany Resorts Casino, and man, trendsetter, what an amazing time last night was. Double or nothing. We got your recap for you here today. Trendsetter, what's going on, man?
What's going on is we're trying to actually recuperate from everything we dealt with. It was a night of first, basically, and what I have to say is what a successful time it was, not only for AEW, not only for Cody, the Young Bucks, Kenny, everyone involved, but also for the fans, because we all won, basically, last night for Double or Nothing.
Yeah, I know that is. And we're going to recap the amazing, amazing night that was last night for you here on the High Spot Podcast. But first, follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. Visit us on the website, highspotpodcast.com. And remember, High Spot Podcast is on bodyslam.net. We're also available on the Shining Wizards Network, as well as B Plus Player Radio Network, and we're available on all podcast platforms where they're available. You can find the High Spot Podcast. So, Trendsetter, you know, we can go into the matches, we can go, you know, what was the best and the worst, but what's the one thing you're going to take away from this whole night?
I think collectively, if you ask all the audience members that are part of it, and you ask fans here around the hotel and resort, they're all going to say the same thing. They felt they were part of something special. They felt now, more than ever, it was that stamp that there is an alternative out there. Not that we're trying to hate on WWE and other promotions out there. I mean, you've got the Ring of Honor, you've got Impact, you've got New Japan, you've got MLW, just to name a few, because I'm leaving a whole lot out. But basically, there is another alternative there to watch. It's the analogy I use all the time, Jeff. It's Baskin-Robbins. You have 31 flavors to choose from now. It's not just vanilla and chocolate. You have so much more to go for right now. And I think last night was a staple of it.
Excited to be here on the podcast movement stage here. The Jersey Wrecking Crew, Jeff Martin, alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berger. We will have the boss man, Cassidy Haynes from BodySlam.net, in just a few minutes to get his take on last night's festivities. But yeah, I got to say one thing is that a lot of people are going to come out here and they're going to be full of emotion. They're going to say, like, wow, this is the best thing ever. And I'm kind of glad we had at least a night to let it digest. And I'm going to continue to say that. Right now, the pay-per-view, the event so far of 2019 was Double or Nothing last night. And what I'm going to take away from it is just that atmosphere that we hadn't seen since All In, that kind of movement, that there's a change coming in the world of professional wrestling. And I'm telling you, man, from start to finish, from the buy-in all the way to the show itself, it delivered. I mean, again, I had a night to sleep on it, and I had a chance to maybe pick apart some things, but the feedback that you get on social media, which is very important nowadays, is that it was a home run. And so now we're going to bring in Cassidy Haynes of BodySlam.net, the boss man, our boss.
What's going on, guys?
What's up, Cassidy? How you doing?
I'm a little tired.
A little tired, yeah?
Yeah?
Still recuperating from last night, I assume.
I'm still recuperating from Wednesday, man. I don't think I've stopped much since, but it's been fun, man. It's been...
Well, it is Sin City, so you're allowed to sin all you want, but just your thoughts real quick on Double or Nothing. We were kind of sitting a little bit, you know, close together, and we made the trek into the MGM Grand ourselves. So just your thoughts walking in, the atmosphere, and just what did you think of the night?
The atmosphere alone, I've never been a part of anything like that. Like you said, it's everybody felt like they were a part of something. It kind of felt like together. You know, you felt included in this whole thing, and, you know, everybody was in such a great mood. Yeah, everybody you talked to, everybody was in great spirits. How many times we were stopped along the way, just people talking to us. So it was a wild night, man. Down on the floor was crazy too. There was just celebrities everywhere, wrestlers wandering around. It was a pretty wild scene, man.
What's the one thing you're going to take away from last night? I told the trendsetter, he gave me his answer. What's one thing that going back home you're going to remember with you?
I mean, just being there with the people that we were with you guys, that was pretty awesome. And just, you know, standing there watching the after the show thing, you know, the promo afterwards, just listening to them talk and kind of just feeling part of that was pretty big to me. You know, I kind of felt like they were talking to us. It was personally on a different level there.
So many things to get into, and one of the things too that I think one thing that makes that the Cody, the Young Bucks is that relatability factor, the way they connect with the fans and the way they always say thank you for them to come out. Even Kenny, who is battered and beaten, takes the time out to say thank you to the fans, how he's proud of what they've accomplished with AEW. And I'm going to say it was a success. And the question going now is, should WWE be concerned?
You know they're not going to. I mean, how do you compete with that money machine? But product-wise, I mean, I think it's very much they compete with them on a product level, but how do you compete with that money-making monster that WWE is?
Trendsetter?
I think collectively everybody's going to think, yes, you need to worry and concern yourself. I mean, you listen to Dustin talk about it on the post-presser. You heard Jericho talk about it. You heard Cody discuss it. You know, it's not that they should be worried, concerned, but it's going to be drawing their attention. And, you know, they'd be naive enough, and Vince would be too high on his horse to think otherwise. He notices other things out there when they create a buzz. There's no doubt, you know, and perfect examples was during the Hall of Fame ceremony, Triple H taking digs at AEW, Shawn Michaels saying, you guys are all in. Those are jabs at AEW particularly. You don't have to do it. You don't have to acknowledge it. And I think right now they're not worried, but they know they're in the forefront. They can see the forest beyond the trees here. They know it's out there. Like I've said to other people before, I mean, for people to think that's going to happen in a year, 2 years, you're kind of naive to think that. This is a long-term goal, a long-term process. You see it from Cody's standpoint, how he talks about it. You see how the Young Bucks talk about it. It's not something overnight. They're not going to directly say they're competing with WWE, but now they got a TV deal. They're getting more exposure out there. They're getting that sense that you and I talked about before. Could ever be back close to the Monday Night Wars? I don't know that. I can't answer. It's too early to tell. But right now, it's very difficult to make a good first impression, and AEW did it. So, yes, WWE is aware of it, but I wouldn't say they're concerned right now.
So in all of that, when you talked about Triple H's comments at the Hall of Fame ceremony and taking his jabs at Billy Gunn and AEW there, Cody kind of made a statement, which a lot of people are wondering, should he have, or, you know, was it really worth it? But he did, and he basically took a sledgehammer and destroyed Triple H's throne. He challenged the King of Kings. So do you guys think that is something that Cody will regret in the long run, or do you think, you know what, it's the spirit of the moment, I got caught up in it? Well, obviously, it was something planned, but do you think it's something that kind of is the first fire shot at WWE?
He made a comment about that, didn't he, where he said, I might not be able to take back that.
But. Yeah, he basically said he burned that bridge. He knows he can never go back, which, you know, I think is a little embellished, to be honest with you, Cassidy, because how many people have done far worse, and exactly. They've been welcomed back with open arms. But honestly, as much as people, Jeff, want to talk about that, let's be honest here, Cody wasn't the first one to fire the first shot. It was Triple H. It was Vince. It was them making comments, you know, diminishing what they were, a piss-ass company. You know, that's firing the first shot.
Yeah,
and all they're doing is replying, retorting back to that. So in the sense of, he fired a shot back. It was directly aimed at Triple H and the WWE. But in terms of the bridge being burned, I don't think bridges really are burned nowadays. And that's been far worse that's been done. But Cody knows that he has no plans of ever going back to WWE. And he knows that, you know, this is a long-term investment, what he's doing.
And we were talking before we come in here, and a lot of the things were like, should it really be directed at Triple H? I mean, it is kind of Vince's baby. We all know that the final say goes through Vince, and yes, Paul Levesque, Triple H does have some hand in it, but at the end of the day, it goes towards Vince. Do you think that shot fired at Triple H was indeed necessary, and maybe should have been towards Vince McMahon?
Maybe, but I think there was a little personal thing there that he might have held from back when he actually got his release, because he made a comment about that beforehand, too. About I hope they still wish me the best in my future endeavors or something he said going into was it 2 days ago or something?
Yeah.
Made that comment. So, I mean, maybe it was more like a little personal jab, but, I think overall the message should have been sent to the different person than Triple H.
All right, so, we know that the shots were fired. We know that that was a message towards Triple H, but I think the pure message that was sent to WWE and the entire wrestling world was that AEW is here for the long run. They are here. They made their presence felt last night. They're going to in the next coming months, too, as they've announced All Out for Labor Day weekend in Chicago. They've already going to do Fight for the Fall coming up, announcements that you knew were coming, but man, now it's official, man, this thing is going, and now WWE has to be a little bit concerned. And how about also the second companies, the ones that are vying for that number two that you always hear, oh, we're the number two, or, you know, we're fighting to be the number two. Right now, in just one show, doesn't it seem like AEW is the number two promotion now?
I'm conflicted on that, Jeff. You know why? Here's the thing. We've spoken to several talent promoters, and they all said, hey, there's no problem being number two because they know that WWE is and forever will be, at least from this point on, maybe 10 years down the road, that might be different. You never know. But they're the number one. But when you look at guys like Cody, the Young Bucks, Kenny, Tony Khan, all these guys, it doesn't look like they're settling for just second place. And honestly, let's be realistic here. If you're settling for second place, then what's the point of being in the race? Because you want to be first. If you're not, you know, like Ricky, like the Talladega Knights, Ricky Bobby, if you're not first, you're last, basically. And that's true in terms of this. But again, I'm not going to be the one to buy into the fact that, you know, this is about competing with WWE. It's about showing an alternative. You've heard it from the comments during the pressers, too. I mean, even Dustin Runnels said it, too. Dustin Rhodes said, you know, Vince better watch his ass. I don't know if it's that point yet, but let's be here. Clear on one thing. When you look at WWE, they don't call them wrestling fans. They call them sports entertainer enthusiasts. They're in sports entertainment. AEW is all about professional wrestling. They call themselves wrestlers. They call them belts and titles and championships. They're not worried about that. They want the product itself to be a variety show like you spoke about before. But you know, in the retrospective of everything, we have to be clear on what they identify themselves with rather than what WWE identifies themselves with.
Cassidy? No, I think Trendsetter said it well here. And my question now
I
is...
I always do.
Trendsetter always has the final word.
When I interview people, I basically answer the question for them once I ask them the question.
So now let's go into the night. Let's talk about Double or Nothing, the card, the matches. And of course, everything is going to kind of be overshadowed by Jon Moxley, the artist formerly known as Dean Ambrose. He made his... Well, yeah, I know. It's Jon Moxley now, and he has now signed a full-time, multi-year contract with AEW. But again, that was the talk of last night. The rumors were true, guys. Jon Moxley now is AEW. You kind of were talking about it when he had that, you know, little promo after he left WWE. But wow, what a coup for AEW to have Jon Moxley on their roster.
Let me ask you guys a question. Of course, a huge surprise, and you could tell from the excitement of the crowd, Jon Moxley making his debut at All Elite Wrestling for Double or Nothing. But honestly, between the two of you guys and the three of us, I've let my emotions felt. I had a feeling it was going to be him. Was there any debate going back and forth between the two of you? Was it going to be CM Punk or Jon Moxley? Or was there somebody else possibly, a wild card we didn't know? Funny, wild card WWE, right? There's a wild card factor that you thought maybe was going to be there besides the two of those guys debuting in Vegas.
Well, I mean, I kind of thought that Jon Moxley would have been the guy. It made sense. He's from Vegas. You know, it's only a hop, skip, and a... You know, from over here and a jump over here to the MGM Grand for him. So I thought that would make sense. And he obviously was frustrated with what WWE was doing with him. And, you know, he let it be known. And I do give him credit because he stuck to his gun and he said, you know what? Whatever money you throw at me, WWE, whether it's $5 million per year, $6 million, or $3 million, whatever, and lesser dates, whatever, it's not about that. It's about the wrestling. It's about the entertaining. It's about all those factors and him to be creatively satisfied. So I give him credit for that. I thought it was Jon Moxley, and then you know what happened? When I saw that All Out and I saw that that was going to be on Labor Day weekend, I was thinking, you know what? It just makes too much sense. I think Tony Khan has a great relationship with CM Punk. I think that, you know, he's still somewhere down deep inside. His anger should not be towards professional wrestling. It should be towards WWE. And that's a lot different being mad at a company than the sport that you grew up watching and loving and wanting to do all your life. So I'm going to say that, yeah, Jon Moxley was definitely a guy that I thought was going to be there. But I think CM Punk, if you save him for Chicago, it's going to be tremendous. They blew the roof off MGM Grand for Moxley. Just think of what they're going to do for CM Punk if he shows up at the Sears Center, Cassidy.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, I think we discussed this riding around the other day that those were the only two names that made sense to make this happen. And they had to do something they showed to grab everyone's attention, to put them on the map, really. And that was the only option, either bring in Moxley or you bring in Punk. So it made sense to do that here. And then, like you said, you texted me, I think, or you tweeted as soon as we saw that announcement for Chicago that, well, there you go. That makes sense for that. So line them, get them both. Just stagger them. One now and one later. So
Yeah, and there's no rush for to get CM Punk in the fold. I think right now they've built up a lot of word of mouth, and the excitement is there because obviously we saw last night they're leading to a Kenny Omega versus John Moxley feud there. Chris Jericho now will go on and take on Adam Hangman Page. We'll talk about the Casino Battle Royale in just a few minutes here, but he'll go on to take on Adam Page at a future date, and that's interesting too because these guys have never faced off each other. So I think right now it's possible that we see CM Punk, but it's not really necessary for them right now to do it. And one thing I want to ask you two guys is this. I'm going to turn the tables and ask you guys this question is, you know what? If Jon Moxley didn't show up, don't you think the wrestling alone last night was well enough for it to be successful? I think Moxley put it over the top, but if, you know, without Jon Moxley, I think that event still would have been talked about as highly as it was last night.
I completely agree with that. Unfortunately, I hate agreeing with you, but that's true.
I hate
because
that.
Ultimately, you know, when you look at it, if you didn't have Jon Moxley show up and Jericho just basically go out there, do his speech, and out comes Adam Hangman Page, and you ended on that, I think ultimately still would have been a success. That just threw it over the top. It was a disposable cherry on top, if you want to say that. So, yeah, I think ultimately if it wasn't for Jon Moxley, it still would have been a successful night.
Yeah, I think it would have been a success overall, but from you have to do something to grab that casual fan, the person that is the WWE machine, the universe person. So they had to do something to grab those to grab that audience to step them aside, to make a dent, you know, other than just the wrestling product, because that's going to cater to that crowd, to the audience that they're working towards, you know, and those people are going to be happy regardless, you know. Nobody would have complained regardless with that show, like you said, just on the wrestling alone without that Moxley surprise. So they had that in the bag, but you had to do that one extra step to get those other people, and I think that's what they did, bringing them in last night, and it was well done all around.
Oh, man, and all of the WCW kind of little references, too, because I was thinking about it as when Scott Hall came down that night, that infamous night in WCW on Monday Night Show, and Trendsetter here told me also kind of a little dig at the Shield when he's coming down through. Mm-hmm. So you could take that. But, guys, I just think, before we move on, the significance of WWE making – you never really usually, you know, put out there that this guy is leaving. He's not re-signing, right? And so when he leaves, and because WWE, I think, at the back of their minds thought that he was actually going to re-sign at the last second, it kind of makes it even bigger for Moxley to jump to AEW. I've never seen that before where WWE maybe felt they were a little too confident that they could get him to re-sign. I mean, Renee Young is there. We all know that's his wife. And, you know, Seth Rollins coming back. Roman Reigns coming back early from, battling leukemia. So at the end of the day, I think WWE kind of felt that they kind of had it in the bag that he would re-sign. And for them to kind of push someone that's on the way out, you know, it's kind of, you know, weird to me.
I thought maybe, you know, they're lacking this next superstar, too. I mean, you got Roman Reigns, but you have Cena, and then who's left after that? So maybe to send him off to go make a bigger name for himself for that return later, then you have that returning huge superstar coming back home later at a later date. So maybe let him go do his own thing, become a star they need for later, you know, like they've done with a lot of people, you know, turn him loose, go do something, then we'll bring you back, like Drew McIntyre and those guys. So maybe this is one of those where go see what you can do, and then that way we can make a lot more money down the road later.
You know, you talk about stars and building stars, and one star that you can see, and I know a guy that kind of wants to step out of the shadows of Cody, of the Young Bucks, and Kenny, is Adam Hangman Page. And, until he joined Bullet Club, I really didn't know of him. And then just seeing him in Ring of Honor, seeing him with his matches against Kota Ibushi at the G1 Supercard in New Orleans, seeing him, he has that it factor. And I think here in AEW, he's going to be the man here, and he's going to get a chance at Chris Jericho down the road for that beautiful AEW championship. And just your thoughts on Adam Hangman Page. To me, he has an it factor. He's a freaking horse, and I just want to know if you guys feel the same way.
I've heard, well, I'm a North Carolina guy, so I've heard him references like modern Magnum TA. You know, that's kind of how a lot of people down where I'm from picture him. So yeah, I love him, man. I think he's great. Like, I think that's how I see him too. Like, Magnum was going to be that era's big star until the accident. So, I mean, he has the potential to do the same thing. He's got the look. Everything about him is just a future talent, superstar in the making.
The great thing about Adam Hangman Page is, Jeff, the mere fact that not only, like you said, when you first saw him, you only knew him as a member of the Bullet Club at that time. We knew he was good in the ring, but I don't think a lot of people saw what he could do in the ring. And then you see some of his matches and some of the classics he had in New Japan and Ring of Honor, and you're like, wow, this guy can go. But then you started wondering, does he have a personality? I think a lot of what helped him was the Being the Elite videos that were on YouTube. It showcased a lot of his personality, his dick rivalry with Joey.
Top rivalry of 2018.
Yeah, that was amazing. Like you said, one of the top highlights too. And I think more importantly, when we were on the cruise, and you heard a lot of it during the Jericho podcast when they're on the boat and we're there listening to it, that, you know, this guy was a school teacher. He did this on the weekends. And so you start seeing more of the human element of Adam Hangman Page rather than just the guy who can go in the ring and just, like, can have 5-star matches with anybody because he's that good. You start seeing the human element. And I think with that, with the audience, especially nowadays in this form of wrestling that we're watching, if they can relate to you, if you can give them a humanistic side of you, then they're going to cheer or boo you no matter what you are. And I think Adam right now is showcasing more of his personality, more of his persona, more than ever, and that's going to lead him in the next direction. I mean, even when the first press conference started where AEW became a thing, it was born in Jacksonville, Florida, Adam Hangman Page's first goal, besides Pac, when he showed up unexpectedly, and then we know what happened, unfortunately, he didn't get the
match he wanted.
Surprisingly,
tonight, no one's talking about Pac.
Nobody's talking about that. Because of the events of what happened, it's a great way of bypassing all that stuff, but he said he wanted to be a champion. We've seen Kenny be champion. We've seen Cody. You've seen the Young Bucks. You've seen Marty Scurll be a champion. I think he wants his moment in the spotlight, and what better time to do it with a new promotion that is hot and has so much momentum behind it than AEW.
And, of course, he wins the Casino Battle Royale. Very great concept, which that Battle Royale was. Any of you guys see anybody else stand out to you in that Battle Royale?
I was all over the place during that one myself. I was on the floor for that. I was running around.
You guys don't know, Cassidy makes the rounds. He's got to book people. Yeah. He's trying to get the name of the bodyslam.net out there. So I get that. Cassidy's making the rounds. Wrestling is secondary in his world because he's got to promote.
I was pressing the flesh during that, man. I was out there making it happen for
you. You know, getting a beer. He's multitasking. So you're allowed. You're trying to get Body Slam out there. You're trying to get the High Spot podcast, the Jersey Wrecking Crew, your tag team that we're on display here for you here in Las Vegas. Trendsetter, anybody stand out for you?
Well, of course. I mean, you'd have to be living under a rock, as he says. Maxwell Jacob Friedman is definitely somebody that people need to keep their eyes on. We've seen him on the independent scenes in the Northeast in New York, New Jersey. We saw him and the reaction he got at All In Chicago. And then I had a chance to talk with him and the after party. And, you know, besides, you know, him being very flamboyant and arrogant, as most people say, he's just very confident in who he is. And it showcased himself that he can harness that much attention, that much reaction from a crowd. I mean, most people think it's easy to be a bad guy. It's easy to be a heel, to have people hate you. It's not as easy as people might think, and yet he's able to push buttons and has worked his way where his talking style is so good, it's effortless. And that just gives a lot of respect to the amount of work he's put in. But I think Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF, if you guys don't know it, he says he's better than you and you already know it. I think that's true. And he's next in there, whether, you know, whatever happens between Jericho and Hangman Page, he's right there in the pinnacle of being a big name and a big face for this company, which is why guys like Cody and guys like AEW wanted to bring him in, because he does have that, you know, we talked about the it factor with Adam Hangman Page in terms of he can go in the ring. The cool thing about Maxwell Jacob Friedman is that he doesn't have to do these high-flying spots. He can do them, but he chooses and picks the moments when he does it, and I think that's what makes him pretty special for this organization.
And plus, I mean, I could never see him as a babyface maybe down the road. He's kind of got like a little bit of the Miz in him too as well, right?
Let's not insult him here.
But like, I you can see last night where they are pushing their guys. You can tell Hangman Page is a future world champion, and you know, to put him in with a veteran like Jericho who beat Omega. We'll get into that match in a little bit as well. But you kind of see where they're going with their stars. You can see kind of the lineage of who exactly are going to be the supporting cast and eventually going to move up to the main players.
Yeah, I MJF stood out. I mean, his work on the mic was hands down the best mic work of the night, and he lives that gimmick, man. That's the thing, is like, he, like you said, he believes he's better than everybody else, and he all the time, he's always in character. It's like selling that, and it shows it works.
All right, so now, guys, what I want to talk to you about is the whole night we saw tremendous wrestling, but there's got to be that one match that, you know, compared to the other matches, that struck an emotional point to you. It didn't have to be even emotional, that you were like, wow, that was the best match of the night. And I didn't talk to you guys beforehand about this because I wanted this to be, like, raw here about what your thoughts were. But, you know, I, for one, will let you know that my match of the night was the Dustin and Cody match.
Hands down.
I mean, it is, you know, that thing was tremendously done. It strikes a nerve with me because, you know, it's that, you know, that brother aspect. You know, you have an older and younger brother. The brother looks up to you and vice versa. And then sometimes that relationship can be strained sometimes. But at the end of the, day, your family, your blood. And, you know, besides that, just how sad it was that WWE had somebody like Dustin Rhodes on their roster. And to me, it was just, man, this guy can still go. This guy can tell a story. This guy, put him in a storyline with some young guy. Let him make that other superstar. And they have him just, you know, oh, just collect your money and, you know, whatever, just so you don't jump ship, whatever like that. But you know what? It was tremendous to see Cody again. The expression on his face, he knows how to tell a story. Dustin, you don't have to tell him. He's a pro. He's a pro's pro. He knows how to do it too. You know, there's sometimes where color is good. And to me, that also added to the match and just the moves. And at the end of the night, you're gonna remember that speech that Cody gives at the end. And, you know, it was wow. It was right there. It got me. And they told a story through social media. You didn't need a long build. And man, you know, WrestleMania's loss is Double or Nothing's game, because that was a tremendous match that definitely should have been on a pay-per-view.
I mean, they wanted to do that for how many years? You know, I mean, that's they've talked about that, like working a program together, and then they got put in that tag team, and they made the best of that, and it just, you know, work with what you have. And I mean, I think they even pitched that they should have a program and a match at WrestleMania together, and that's wasted opportunity. And they showed perfectly how to tell a story, and that was the best storytelling in wrestling I've seen in years, hands down. And as someone that grew up watching WCW in North Carolina from that, and from Marietta, you know, my nanny, actually, my cousin's nanny, went to school and graduated with Cody, so I kind of feel more invested in that. And I feel like that's like a story that I've watched from as a kid. You know, Dustin from WCW on, it just felt like 20 years of storytelling in one match last night. It was amazing.
You know, when you look at it, I think we're all in agreement here that the emotional match of the night was Dustin and Cody. No question about that. Not only for the theatricals of what Cody did, you know, taking the sledgehammer and destroying the throne of what was supposed to be Triple H's throne, and Dustin Rhodes, the natural, coming out here and kind of being a let's say a vindication for all the wrongs he's done in his career, kind of a way to finally go off into the sunset, which is what it was kind of drawn out to be. And what got me emotionally was not necessarily, I mean, you are talking about the brotherly connection. Yes, that was definitely there. Tears were shed. I have to admit, I was fighting back a few myself. I mean, who wouldn't? If you don't, you don't have a soul, basically. If you don't,
you're soulless.
If you don't tear up or something like that. But to me, it was two things, Jeff. It was the fact that it was Dustin finally kind of in a 30-year career. And I used this word previously talking about AEW, but putting a stamp on his career, like, this is what I'm all about. This is who Dustin Rhodes is. I've done a lot of wrong in my career, which he's gone about talking about publicly, but he felt like this is his opportunity to showcase to a newer audience that, you know, this is who I am, and this is what I stand for. And wrestling is in his blood. It's part of his family. It doesn't define who he is as a person, because he said his legacy is set, but it helps represent and showcase the emotions that he probably can't in an interview or with words. And I think he showcased that there with tears in his eyes and blood rolling down his face. And in the opposite, it kind of ended one era and began a new one with Cody. Cody was always the one that people were always going to relate him to his father and always going to relate him to his older brother. And he wanted to go out and be his own man. And then, you know, you talked to me about it before. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this know the anniversary in which he finally said, I am firing you, WWE. And now where he is now was kind of the, you know, this is now the new era that Cody has worked so hard to identify himself. And it's really difficult with third and second generation wrestlers from families to separate yourself from the legacy of your parents. And Cody and Dustin had struggles doing that, and Cody now has come full circle and has become his own man. And I think that was the focal point of what happened at Double or Nothing.
Hey, what was your match of the night?
I told you, it was the Dustin and Cody
match.
We're all in agreement. I think match of the night in terms of from highlights to excitement would have to be the Young Bucks
and
the Lucha Dragons. You know, that was an amazing match.
Yeah.
And I said this to Jeff, and Cassie, obviously you're sitting somewhere else and you're doing the rounds, but I said to him, man, what's next? It's the main event. It's Kenny and Jericho. Man, if I was Kenny or Jericho, I know Jericho has all his experience. He's very confident. He's, you know, this, that, and whatever. But I'd be like, damn, I have to follow that.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck
following that. Oh, my goodness. That should have been the main event in terms of, like, you don't want to go after that. But, you know, at the same respects to Kenny and Chris being professionals as they are, it was a different pace of a match. But ultimately, the match of the night was the Young Bucks. And to me, I'm so happy, you know, because Cassie, I didn't get a chance to tell you this, but I love tag team wrestling. I grew up on that. I love tag team wrestling. I feel that is the proper way to develop newer stars. And to me, it just showcased how tag team wrestling, when you look at it from the standpoint of every other promotion, AEW does it right.
I agree with that. And speaking of tag team, an honorable mention, that Best Friends and Jack Evans and Angelico match. That was a sleeper, man. That was super fun, too. Like, that was good storytelling as well. You know, good spots with You're Not Best Friends.
Not only that, but that and the six women tag team match with the three the six Japanese women who I'd be lying to if I could say their names. Those were matches, honestly, I feel on the card, and you guys tell me if you think differently, were matches that probably people would say, oh, this is a concession stand break. This time
or my bathroom break. This is where I will go.
I use that to do some rounds, and I'm like, all right, I can do some rounds right now and, like, still watch and, like, go talk to this person. But then at the same time, I got distracted and was like, oh, I've just spent 10 minutes watching this and didn't even go do anything. So.
And credit to the audience that some people were leaving, but as soon as they started seeing how good the matches were, they started going back to their seats.
I was one of those people. I was like, well, this is, I'm going to take a chance to go get some stuff done. Then I didn't end up going to do anything. I just sat and watched most of that match or stood there near the courseway and watched it. Actually, it was that was a sleeper for me, too, because I hadn't seen a lot from many of those people, and it was... It was good to see. It was a different
type of
match.
It was new. It was something different.
Something different, yeah. Something for this audience that I don't think a lot of people had seen.
Yeah, I kind of was watching the tag team matches, and yes, the Best Friends had a great match. Actually, you know, before the other matches, to me, that was the highlight so far. You know, the Best Friends match with Angelico.
Up to that point, that was the match of the night.
They killed it. Yeah. You know, kudos to Best Friends and Angelico and Jack Evans. And I saw Lucha Bros and Young Bucks put on a, I don't know if that's performance or what that was. It was just four men in sync with just every move. And what can I say, man? They're four of the very best of, you know, in their craft. And it left me scratching my head, guys, because, you know, I'm looking at the teams that WWE has. They have the Revival. They have the Usos. You know, they have very skilled tag teams. And for me to think that WWE just can't dedicate more time to tag teams instead of making them, you know, the butt of jokes or having your tag team champions or a great tag team, you know, doing shave my back scenes and stuff like that. Guys like Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson who are looking at that last night and saying, what am I freaking doing here?
Did you see their comments?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody, even the Revival, this... watching that, they were like, this is tag team wrestling. They were all talking about it. So, I mean,
I guess Cody did a little message to the Revival there with the Starbucks coffee cup in the beginning of the promo. And we saw photos of actually Tama Tonga and Jay White visiting Carl Anderson while they were here in the States, whatever. And you don't think that guys like Gallows and Anderson who decided not to re-sign and are just buying their time before their deals are up in September, that now their options are, I can stay in the States with my family and work for AEW or, you know, do the rounds again in New Japan.
Yeah, I agree with that. And WWE could do so much with tag team, but it just comes down to, like, the one person that makes the call doesn't like it. And he hasn't liked tag team wrestling in a long, long time. So you're going to get that. You're going to get back segments and just five-minute throwaway matches and teams put together that aren't even really teams just to have something for people to do. So,
guys, make sure you go to prowrestlingtees.com/highspotpodcast because, you know what, not only are the Jersey Wrecking Crew amazing podcasters, but we're also in the shirt-selling game. So make sure you...
Speaking of, I think I have a podcast.
BodySlam.net
has one too, yeah.
Yeah.
Check us out as well while we're hawking shirts.
Yeah, definitely. So make sure you go to prowrestlingtees.com and the slash highspotpodcast or slash BodySlam.net, right?
Yeah.
And pick up your shirt. Look fresh for the summer and get yourself a... very, very spiffy looking Jersey Wrecking Crew High Spot Podcast t-shirt, and also get yourself a bodyslam.net shirt as well. So go make sure you go to prowrestlingtees.com, because that's right, the Jersey Wrecking Crew High Spot Podcast, bodyslam.net, have their own stores on that site. So definitely the summertime's coming along, you're sporting your bodyslam.net shirt. We got the High Spot Podcast t-shirts here, so definitely we're in that game too. So make sure you go to prowrestlingtees.com. Trendsetter, so you know, the tag team scene, you know, it is what it is. It's going to flourish in AEW. Anything else stand out for you that we have not really touched upon yet for the show?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, ultimately let's talk about what was selling. What was the key marquee matchup that everybody was supposedly paying a ticket to see? You know, Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega. And I've heard comments of how people enjoyed it. They liked it, especially towards the end with Jon Moxley making his debut and kind of surprising everybody. But I don't think a lot of people are supposedly talking about the match itself. And I've heard negative comments where people are like, oh, it's pretty bad when a 48-year-old is your top guy in AEW. And I'm like, those types of individuals are missing the point, I feel. Because, not I feel, I know they're missing the point. Because when you see Kenny and Alpha versus Omega 2, from the match they had, one of the classic matches, and some people could say one of the best matches of that year at the Tokyo Dome between Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho for the IWGP United States Championship, a one hell of a match. It kind of brought a different side of Kenny we hadn't seen before. We knew Kenny Omega was this high-flying guy, you know, as Jericho says, a 15-year sensation in the industry overnight. Nobody knew who he was until he faced Chris Jericho. I mean, his matches with Okada. But to face a guy like Chris Jericho with the 30 years experience he's had in the ring, and to see the different type of more aggressive, more dangerous type of Kenny Omega, I suppose he doesn't have to do all the spots, the high-flying dives anymore. I think in this one was kind of a continuation of that, because it wasn't a no-disqualification match. And a lot of people were questioning, can Jericho go toe-to-toe with Kenny Omega? And that's what I think people misconstrued what this whole thing was about. It wasn't about Chris Jericho going one-on-one to see if he could still do it, if he could keep up with a guy like Kenny Omega. I think the main focus was, could these two create another masterpiece again? I think they did. Every single match we talked about, whether it be Cody and Dustin, that was an emotional story match. The Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros, of that being high-flying and what tag team wrestling, you know, the new future of it's all about. This one is more of a fight. It was a brawl. Yeah. And, you know, Jericho said towards the end, he beat Kenny Omega. He got the crap kicked out of him, and he won by the skin of his teeth, but he still won. It just shows a testament of Chris Jericho, one, reinventing himself completely, and kudos to him, and still being successful at it. But a guy like Kenny Omega, I think people overlook, because for him, for a lot of people who didn't know who Kenny Omega was, I think ultimately towards the end of the night they found out who he was. You know, talk about the long layoff he had, showed no signs of ring whatsoever. It looked like he was in the best shape of his life. That time off was much needed, because I'm sure he was nursing a lot of injuries. I think that showcased who Kenny Omega really was, and builds up between him and Jon Moxley.
Are you a fan of the Judas Effect?
I was a fan of when we saw it on Instagram.
It's out of nowhere it came out, I guess.
It came out of nowhere, but I'm not a fan of the move per se. But ultimately, hey, like I said, that's part of it too. It's exclusive to AEW, and ultimately it worked. And it doesn't matter how nice it looks. I'm sure I'm talking in the mind of Chris Jericho. Doesn't matter how nice it looks. Doesn't matter how cool it looks. If it works and gets you wins, that's all that matters, Junior. So that's what happened.
And for Kenny Omega, Trendsetter's kind of right. It was a different style of Kenny Omega that we hadn't seen. I mean, he had to, you know, brawl with Chris Jericho through tables on the outside. It was more of a brawl, and we're used to the Kenny Omega and Okada matches, and we're used to seeing like that kind of like a masterpiece. You see that like kind of the move ballet kind of thing going on, and it was a different Kenny Omega last night.
Well, they'd already had those matches. I mean, that match was totally different last night. Like you said, it was a brawl. It was a different match from every other match on the card, too. I mean, you had all the high spots and all the well-choreographed. Like, it was the fight feel that they needed for the main event, I thought, in Vegas. I thought it delivered with that total different atmosphere and mood than every other match on the card. So it stood out.
The only thing I'm going to say that I would say between a Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega rivalry is, I'm sure a lot of people listening would agree to this, and again, it can't happen, of course, because it's now the current day now, but I wish we had Chris Jericho, not that he's not good now, but if we had Chris Jericho maybe 10, 20 years ago in his prime, not that he's not past his prime or he's over the hill or anything like that, but I wish we had Chris Jericho in his prime facing Kenny Omega in his prime, and to me, it's like, could you imagine what kind of match that would have been?
No, yeah, it would have been amazing. But like you said, I know you don't mean the prime. You mean that version, maybe,
that version of Chris Jericho.
I was like, even the one 10 years ago would have been tremendous to see Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho. But we got to see it again. It leaves open for a, Kenny Omega versus Jericho 3.
Oh, it's there. It's there. Yeah. The rubber match is going to happen down the road. But right now we know they're going in a different direction, which is beautifully done and how you want to do it. People are like, oh, you got to save this match for a special purpose. No, this is perfect to do it now because now it's 1-1. So who's going to get the better of the third rubber match? We'll see that down the road, and it builds up. That's smart business, guys.
Yeah, and
yeah,
Chris,
there's no reason to rush that payoff.
Yeah, and Chris Jericho was a guy that, too, if he gets the win over Omega, it's going to look good when he takes on Hangman Page, who I believe will be the AEW champion. And I think it sets him up because, to make that match mean a lot, Jericho had to win. Jericho had to win, and it does that. Kenny goes on to take on Moxley, which is going to be amazing. And then also, too, you got to also think about this, too. Jericho not only, has a big match against Omega, but in a few weeks, he's going to New Japan, and he's going to take on the Rainmaker, Okada, and that's going to be amazing, too. And you know what? Let's talk about that. You go from Kenny Omega in the biggest night, maybe, in the history, in wrestling, where you have a new brand in AEW, Double or Nothing, and now he's going to New Japan. He's going to challenge for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, the Painmaker versus the Rainmaker. Talk about that, guys.
You want to talk about dream match scenarios? This is a video
amazing
game. It only happened perfectly in a fantasy world, but it's going to happen. I think this is a great move, not only by AEW and Chris Jericho, but a great move by New Japan Pro Wrestling. Jeff and I would go back and forth, Cassie, about, you had that collective partnership between Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling. You had the the G1 specials, and then you had Super Card of Honor. But now it seemed like who is going to be the first one, as Jeff would tell me, who's going to jump and actually now work with AEW. To me, it makes sense if all three of them work collectively, and we talked about this, Cassidy, too, off the air, where it'd be cool if all three of them could work together. This is the first signs now, because if you have the scenario where Okada's already established in Japan, let's say, and I'm not jumping the gun here, now let's say Jericho were to be victorious and defeat Okada. First of all, the marquee Jericho versus Okada is huge. Jericho wins it. He is now the new IWGP Heavyweight Champion. He became the Intercontinental Champion. Now he's the Heavyweight Champion. I mean, that's just another notch in Chris Jericho's belt. But then he was supposed to face Adam Hangman Page as the IWGP Heavyweight Champion and loses. That could be an issue, but still, it just brings more prestige to AEW because now you have all this happening. And it gives the feeling back, at least for us, back in the supposed Attitude Era, the Golden Age of Wrestling, as we like to call it, where anything can happen. And this is the only time frame that I can remember where that's a possibility. Can you imagine Jericho winning it and now him being a champion in New Japan and also being on the active roster for AEW?
Yeah, it's just good that, like you said, it keeps things fresh. Like you said, anything can happen to kind of feel that we haven't had in a long time, and that's good. That's something that's been missing, and yeah, I mean, I really don't know what to think about that. I mean, it's something I can't wait to see.
Can you guys see Jericho winning, or does that make sense business-wise? Is it more just a match to sell tickets, or could the possibility of Jericho winning the IWGP Heavyweight Championship make good sense, business sense for New Japan?
I think this is Okada's time. I think they want him. He already is the greatest IWGP heavyweight champion of all time, but I think this run for Okada is beating the very best again, and I think that this is going to be the way I see it. I think Okada walks away with the championship, defending it. Great match, and I just can't envision what you're saying about New Japan taking that title and having it promoted on a company that they don't even have a partnership with. So, I mean, I love to believe that one day they'll work together, but I just don't see it, and I think Okada walks away as the IWGP champion.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, I think it opens up the door to hopefully they'll work together like in future. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think you take the title off your guy if you're not having a working relationship going forward. It doesn't make sense business-wise, but they both can benefit from the exposure of the match, which is really what I think matters, right?
Well, I would disagree with you both, because you're talking about it wouldn't make good business sense. Well, first of all, if you're already contracting Jericho to work for New Japan Wrestling, although he is now contractually signed exclusively for AEW, there's already a partnership there. whether you want to admit it or not, for long term. There's already an agreement between the both companies. We want to use Chris Jericho. Okay, we will lend you Chris Jericho. I think it's smart to have Jericho win the title. You know why? Because since they lost Kenny Omega, and you guys can talk about Okada, and this is his time, and he's the best, he wants to prove they can beat the best. Here's the thing. Jericho made a great point, as he always does, right? I'm here kissing Chris Jericho's ass yet again.
Oh, as always.
But he said, before he showed up to New Japan Pro Wrestling, a lot of people didn't know New Japan existed, which is very true. It brings the casual fan over. Everything they did with Kenny Omega and the Bullet Club at that time, the Elite, trying to bridge that gap, which is why we had the G1 specials. You know, if this is New Japan just wanting to do it to sell tickets, fine. And do that, have your one-time shot match, and good. But from a business standpoint, it makes sense because it gives a new audience to watch New Japan Pro Wrestling. If New Japan is claiming what they say, that we want to embark on the new era and the new audience to come in, it makes sense for Chris Jericho to win it, defeat Okada, and then Okada have another rematch to win it back from him, to showcase that Okada is the man, but to bring new eyes onto the product. So it would make sense for Chris Jericho to win it. I don't agree with both of you saying that Okada should win. Chris Jericho should be it, and if New Japan Pro Wrestling is smart enough, it would make smart business sense because then your G1 specials become so much more important and so much more audience people want to actually participate in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
There is no question that New Japan took a blow by losing the Bucks, Cody, mainly Kenny. Let's be honest here. That's
the
guy.
And this opens the door for Kenny possibly coming back.
Yeah, that's
too.
The guy that if New Japan goes, if you have one guy back and one guy that, you know, whatever, it's Kenny. It's Kenny Omega. And they want eventually down the road, I think it would make sense for New Japan to work with AEW. I just can't see New Japan, even though you said it is a partnership. I get it. I understand why you consider it a partnership. I just don't see New Japan right now having their IWGP champion.
That's not why I consider it. It is a partnership.
Well, I guess
it's
so.
It's an agreement.
It's an agreement, but I think it's because Jericho wants those dates to work. I don't think if AEW had their druthers, unless they do have like a partnership where they can lend people, I just don't see that. I think that for now, I think that Okada, you know, defends that championship against Chris Jericho. But again, though, it's still tremendous that in a few weeks we can talk about that matchup and we'll be by our phones or on the Fight app or on New Japan World, and we'll be staying up till 3 a.m. watching this matchup. Because it is must talk about. So that is professional wrestling right now. It's on an amazing, amazing upswing, and it just keeps getting better and better. We were at All In, right, last year, and we were saying, oh, it can't get better than this. It really can't. This is a feeling. It's like a Woodstock. So, okay, and then we have that hangover for All In, and then what's next? And then I don't know what you guys thought about WrestleMania. It was, okay, whatever, okay. 7.5 hours of wrestling, fine. If that's your fix, if that's what you love, you're always going to be a WWE fan, and, you know, all power to you, you know. But then you get this Double or Nothing. You get this new thing, and I think what works for AEW is because it's that spontaneity, and Eric Bischoff talked about that. Part of the reason why Nitro worked, because you didn't know who was going to show up on Mondays. You had no idea who was going to, you know, defect, who was going to jump ship. And I think with WWE right now, there is no spontaneity. There is no, because now you have NXT. So now if you're on the indies, you have to go through NXT, unless you're AJ Styles, whatever, fine. But if you're an indie guy, you're going to have to go to NXT. So they know you. They want to build you as their own before you get called up. And then what do? You get buried. Look at Shinsuke Nakamura. That's one of the biggest crimes of all time. Look at Asuka. That's horrible. So when you're looking at stuff like that, I think what AEW works is that now you go over there. Now that WWE guy that's not there, look at Sean Spears. He made his debut as well. I think those kind of guys showing up on these shows, it's what's going to draw people's eyes. And now I'm not saying bring all the WWE guys out here because you just can't do that. You need to, you know, if you're going to build from within, you got to have, you know when to mix those in. But I think what works for AEW is the spontaneity. So, Trendsetter, as we talk about AEW here and Double or Nothing, what do you look forward to now in the next coming months?
Well, what I look forward to is close to what Cody talked about towards the end of the show, which I don't know made air, but I'm sure is on Twitter and stuff like that, that they have to, and you alluded to it, they have to be better than they were before. They have to be better than All In. I think they successfully did that. Now they have to be better than Double or Nothing. So I think the stakes are just raised higher, as Kenny Omega said when he was talking about Jon Moxley. The stakes have been raised, and they are. And I think when you look at the locker room and you look at, you know, the whole roster in general, and Tony Conway talks about it, it's like they're not trying to compare themselves to anybody but themselves. And I think what happens with most companies that have fallen down or haven't reached that plateau where we've all had hopes of, oh, this could be the next one, and it doesn't work, is that they always try to compare themselves to WWE. What are they doing? How can we copy and mirror that rather than let's be innovative ourselves and let's do stuff of our own and let that be itself in terms of good enough for us because that's our standard. We're not worried about the standard of what one machine supposedly is. We're setting our own standards and our own values. I think that's what you get. What I hope to expect is we're obviously going to see something go about with Kenny Omega now and Jon Moxley, two guys who I can't remember have ever worked together, but that would be something exciting to watch. We're going to see now eventually what's going to happen originally with Chris Jericho and Hangman Page. I don't think it's going to happen pretty soon, but then, you know, there's always Maxwell Jacob Friedman who could work his way in there as well. In the meantime, until Jericho's set dates are set, I think his next one, he's going to be in next month in Daytona Beach, Florida. And so it's going to happen then, but his dates are going to be special. And like he said, he's going to show up, and when he shows up, it's going to mean something. And so for me, ultimately, what I'm looking forward to is just how can they make this better each and every time. And I think when you look at it from the Sears Center, which they'll return back to during Labor Day weekend for All Out, and now what they did here at the MGM Grand, there's no doubt in my mind, if anybody listening to this, anybody watching us right now, there's no doubt in my mind that if the T1 Mobile Arena was available and they had signed that up for Double or Nothing, that it would have been sold out.
Yeah, it really would have been.
Easy. Because we talked about, like, leaving, like, it's surprising that that venue was the one that they hold events in that venue, because it was a little smaller than I was expecting when I got there, you know. When I see it on TV, it seems big, but when I got there, it was a little smaller than I was expecting. But yeah, I think they could have sold out a bigger arena easily if they had the opportunity, if it was available.
What are you guys looking forward to in the future of AEW?
I'm looking forward to all the talk and speculation about it because, again, there was tons of talk heading into this. You know, there was talk about why Pac, you know, couldn't take on Hangman Page, who's going to replace Pac, what are they going to do? And obviously, they did a great job. Jon Moxley rumors, oh, he lives in Vegas. He's going to be there. Oh, CM Punk, that cloud is going to be there until he says publicly, I'm done, or until 100% he says no. But even then, you don't know because we all know wrestling is always a work, guys. And so that cloud will always be looming because, like I said,
it's either a work or a rib, basically.
Like I said early on in the show, CM Punk should be mad at WWE, not mad at professional wrestling, because professional wrestling didn't do him dirty. It was WWE in his mind. So he needs to come to terms with that because it's not really professional wrestling's fault, and the fans will love to see him. And that's why in Chicago, All Out, you know, would be the perfect timing for a CM Punk to show up. So that's what I'm going to enjoy talking about this because, you know, we started out, Cassie, a podcast talking about WWE, right? And we were like, oh, okay. But then Ring of Honor came, then New Japan, then MLW, then all these other platforms came up. And Double or Nothing here was amazing. We covered All In, and it was crazy to see the fans love something and be passionate about it. Made us love wrestling again, made us look forward to come on every Friday and do the shows and stuff like that. So I'm going to enjoy the talk. I'm going to enjoy people talking about this company for the time being until we get to the next show.
One thing I think it needs to be mentioned is it's game-changing the way the AEW is giving people like us, you know, regular media that's not the big media outlets, they're like credentializing us. They're giving us access that the other companies don't. And that's going to be huge, I think, for them because they were opening up so many new relationships and so many opportunities for other people that normally we wouldn't get. So it's just something I think it's just great to take advantage of, and I think we'll all just grow from here, and everybody, all of us are going to get bigger because of what they're doing, I think.
And one final thing for me, too, I think is something I overlooked in terms of talking about all the great events, like the next event, like All Out and stuff like that. Let's also not forget, too, as we're wrapping up here, is that, you know, they signed a TV deal. They're on TNT
yeah,
now.
October. Yeah.
So it's not like we're going to be talking about this now, you know, every other month or 2 months for the next event to happen. It's going to be a weekly thing now where that's going to be another interesting thing I'm looking forward to, how they're going to do weekly television from the live format. Are they going to be live every single time? Are they going to be touring? Are they going to tape certain events? How are they going to work the roster that way? Because it's one thing, guys, to build up an event in a month or two and build that up using social media and tools like that. And you know, you don't see it every day. It's like Christmas, right? If Christmas is every time, every year, or every day, you get bored and sick of it. But now how can they...
You get sick of gifts every day?
Well, I don't get any gifts. You know, I get grape from you all the time. line, though. But, you know, for me, how can they continually be new and fresh every single week from a week-to-week standpoint? That, to me, will determine their success from a company in terms of they can do that on TV. But, again, that's a huge step, distribution and getting more eyes on them with a network like TNT.
And also one thing, too, guys, before we wrap up here is don't discredit what that Fox deal means to WWE because, you know what, Fox could make WWE change. They may want to, you know, be like this, but I already hear that Fox might want to change the rating on the TV a little bit, maybe for the third hour. You already see a change in last Monday night. You saw that change in the third hour. I think Fox is going to put the pressure because when you're on network, it's different when you're on, like, the cables. When you're on, like, a show like that, ratings really matter, and I think that WWE will put all stops. And again, competition at the end of the day is what makes everything tremendous, makes everything great. You want to see competition. You want to get, you know, you want to get back to that Monday Night War aspect. So, again, guys, tremendous job here at the Podcast Movement stage. I am Jeff Martin, the trendsetter, Brian Berger, Cassidy Haynes, the boss man from bodyslam.net, which you can follow the website bodyslam.net. And, of course, follow us on Twitter at HighSpotPodcast. Guys, did you enjoy Vegas?
It's been unreal, man. I look forward to it again. We're going to have to do this, make a regular outing out of this, I think, for us. We're going to have to do this often again.
Guys, well, this is only the beginning.
All right, guys, you can follow us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. Go to the website, highspotpodcast.com. Again, we are on every Fridays on bodyslam.net and all podcast platforms. And go buy a shirt at prowrestlingtees.com/highspotpodcast/bodyslam.net and pick up your spiffy Jersey Wrecking Crew High Spot Podcast t-shirts. Folks, I am Jeff Martin, the trendsetter, Brian Berga.
And guys, don't forget, we do this along with Cassidy too. We are here for one reason and one reason only. If you haven't figured it out by now, we are here for you,
the crew.